Gateway Buick GMC has the hottest sale of the summer going on right now. Lease a brand new 2016 Buick Encore for as low as $125 a month. The all-new 2017 Acadia, now on the showroom floor, alongside the luxurious Buick Envision. Shop online at stlouisbuickgmc.com or come by the showroom off I-270 McDonald Boulevard. Gateway, the right way.
Gateway Buick GMC.
Now, back to Jay and Joe on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
Back on the afternoon drive. One of the sponsors here on the show, Mike's Automotive. Celebrating their 40th year of auto service. Collinsville, Millstadt, and Ivory Avenue in St. Louis is where you can find them. You can also find them online at mikesautomotive.net. That's mikesautomotive.net. I go to the Collinsville location. Pete runs that one. His brother George runs the Millstadt location. And Angelo runs the location in St. Louis. Find them online again at mikesautomotive.net. You can find coupons to get certain things fixed on your car. Oil changes, discounts on oil changes, discounts on regular auto work, and also on tires. Find those online at mikesautomotive.net. Gary Bennett coming up at 5:20. Tanner Laws, this day in history, coming up about an hour plus from now at around 4:45. We will talk that one over coming up then, and lots of other stuff to get to, including getting you ready for the Cardinals-Padres as that four-game series begins tonight, ending on Thursday before the Dodgers come into town. So a nice three-team homestand to start the second half of the season. It was about 2 weeks ago, it was brought to my attention an article in the Players Tribune, which has been blowing up, especially since the Kevin Durant article was posted in there. A lot of clicks going to the Players Tribune. So perfect timing for this man to pen this article. You remember him as BJ Crombie of the St. Louis Blues. Now that he is in the financial world, he's gone all professional on us, and he now goes by Brandon Crombie, joining us now here on the Afternoon Drive. Brandon, good afternoon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Is that the reason behind the name change, because of the new profession, or is that was BJ just something that happened in hockey? What's the reason for going by the different first name?
A little bit of both. I think I was called obviously BJ when I was a young kid, and kind of obviously stuck with me through hockey, and then as I got a little older and obviously started looking at making a transition to a professional world, kind of started going by Brandon a little more and slowly made that transition.
The article that you wrote, again, in the Players Tribune, Life After Hockey is what it's titled. You published it on July 8th. How did this come about? Did they come to you? Did you go to them? What was the inspiration for this article?
It really kind of came about a couple guys that I spoke about in the article, John and Duncan, who really kind of helped me with the whole process and what I wanted to do and kind of figuring everything out. They were kind of in the midst of launching a new program with the NHLPA and trying to kind of help players prepare for that transition and make sure they kind of had things started while they were playing. And I was involved in the process, and we kind of talked about some different ways to try to reach out to players, and kind of I think a lot of guys are usually intimidated by it just because they don't, they think it's more than it actually is, or that they don't have time for it or the ability to do it, different things like that. So that was kind of where it came from. We were talking about it, and they said, you know, would you ever do something like this? Are you happy telling your story, or, you know, would you rather keep it private? And I said, no, I have no problem, and really kind of started from a brainstorming session like that and obviously built into what it was.
Brandon, when it comes to reminding players that there is life after hockey, how difficult is it to get them to understand that maybe it will lie in something other than sports, where up until that point in their lives, they've been dedicating themselves, by and large, 24/7, to hockey and some sort of athletic training. How tough is it to get them maybe to focus on, and even maybe yourself, to focus on another endeavor that has little, if anything, to do with your natural athletic talent?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the thing that I think holds most people back is the that you're going into an unknown world and you feel like, you know, you've spent the large majority of your life prepping and really fine-tuning your athletic ability and your sport. So to try to jump into a different business sector is obviously not an easy thing. So I think that was really kind of more what the message was meant to be, is saying, you know, hockey or whatever your sport is, it doesn't last forever, and you know, you're going to want something to do when you're done, and you know, you're going to a lot of athletes are type A personalities that, you know, need something to do, they need to be busy, they need to have a schedule, that type of thing. So by you know, taking the steps while you're playing, it makes that transition a lot easier, sets yourself up a lot better rather than waiting and then, you know, spending a year or two thinking about what you want to do, and by that point, you know, it can be a bit of a challenge to kind of A, figure out what you want to do, and then B, you know, put some substance behind it.
When did you start kind of looking ahead at life after hockey during your playing days?
It was actually my first year in St. Louis when I kind of got more serious about it. I'd you know, been kind of playing around with a few different things and working on some courses, but it was actually by Dan Hinote when I was playing my first year in St. Louis. He kind of introduced me to a couple guys at the Players Union that were helping and kind of had a setup with the school and kind of helped you really identify exactly what you wanted to get into and things like that. So that was kind of probably the first year that I started taking it a little bit more serious and saying, okay, I'm gonna work on this a little bit harder and actually make it a priority to do.
How did you settle on finance then? Was it always something that maybe in the back of your mind was like, this might be interesting? Or during this time in your life when you were considering what career options might lay ahead, or did you just like watch an episode of Mad Money or read the Wall Street Journal and think like, oh, this is pretty interesting?
Yeah, I mean, I always had an interest in finance. You know, really where I needed a lot of direction was finance can be a pretty broad space. So trying to figure out exactly what interests me, what made sense, what I wanted to get into, what I needed to do from a schooling and training and different things like that, all kind of led into the decision. So I always had an interest in it. You know, obviously tried to stay as close to it as I could while I was playing, but you know, it was something that always interested me, and I knew I wanted to get into. And then as I kind of went down the path of figuring out exactly what within that field I wanted to do, you know, that's when it obviously got fine-tuned a little bit more, and you could see certain things that stood out to me that I liked, and other things that I said I don't think that's really for me.
BJ Crombie, our guest here on the Afternoon Drive, now the VP of Private Capital Markets with Greybook in Toronto. The article that you wrote, again, in the Players Tribune, one of the paragraphs that stood out to me was the one about just kind of giving players an idea of what to do after hockey. And I'll read it here. You said, if you think you're interested in being a GM for a hockey team, give the front office of a team a call and set up a meeting. Learn as much as you can. You don't want to, you know, be a GM when you retire only to find out you hate being a scout. So I spend a lot more time around the Cardinals than I do the Blues, and I'm trying to picture a member of the Cardinals today calling up John Mozeliak and saying, hey, I want to shadow you for a day. Is this something that you have seen done in hockey? Is this something that you've actually seen a player do?
I have not seen it done. You know, it was more meant, I think, a lot of guys in hockey, because it's what they know and they understand and they're very well adept at it, that they want to stay in the game. But again, it was something that I learned when I was going through the process and talking to different people. There was things that, from what I knew and understood of it, I thought it would be a perfect fit. It was, you know, sounded really interesting. And then I talked to four or five guys in that industry, and it was nothing like what I thought it was. So I think that's kind of more what it's meant to say. And I think, you know, it's becoming more and more of an accepted thing where guys are, you know, doing school, finding out what they want to do after, doing different things. And I think, you know, looking back, all the GMs that I played for, if I ever called them and said, hey, I mean, I think it would be one thing if you were trying to do it in the middle of the season or something like that. But, you know, to say, hey, I'd love to come down to the draft with you this year and learn a little bit. I think the large majority of GMs would be open to that, in my opinion. I could be completely wrong. But, again, it's more just telling guys that, you know, that's really kind of best practice, because I know personally there was some things that I thought would be interesting when I talked to people what their day-to-day was like and, you know, what they loved about their job, what they hated about it. You learn some pretty interesting things and can tell pretty quick if something really is a fit for your personality, for what you look to do and things like that.
What kind of reaction from current players have you received since this article was published?
I've got real good traction. I think guys have been very supportive of it. You know, I think a lot of guys, they, you know, have asked come some questions, who can I talk to, different things like that. So I think it's been well received. I think, like I said, I think more and more guys, obviously, in the hockey world, we've seen, you know, some guys have some difficulties and struggles and different problems coming out of the game. And I think it's sad that it took that, but I think more and more guys are kind of opening their eyes to whether I need to work or not. You know, I'm going to want something to do, and I'm going to I should take some time now. Again, I don't have to spend all of my day, but take some time now to start to figure out what I want to do. So I think, you know, it's something that's growing, and hopefully, you know, not only the NHL but other leagues are taking the right steps to make sure that they're providing the guys with the best opportunities and the best resources they can.
In the article online, there's a picture here of you in a fight with Ryan Reeves. Who won that?
It definitely wasn't me. I knew I wasn't going to win that one. I played with Reaver, and I was just trying to survive it.
I say, you seem like a smart guy. What are you doing dropping the gloves with Reeves?
That's because I couldn't do too much else to stay at the NHL level. So I figured out early that was my best chance, and unfortunately had to do that for a few years.
Any interest at all in getting back into hockey, into the NHL, or are you now living a different life?
No, I mean, I think it's obviously hockey's always a passion of mine, and obviously put a lot of my life into it. You know, it was something I obviously thought long and hard about when I was kind of looking into this. And to be honest, I think, you know, obviously I spent quite a bit of time looking into this path and trying to determine what would be best for me and if I was interested in this. And, you know, obviously went through all the schools, everything like that. So, you know, really my short-term plan is, you know, obviously to stay in this world, in this business, and, you know, see obviously how it goes and where it goes. But I've enjoyed it immensely so far and don't have any plans of leaving. But I guess with a background in hockey, obviously would never say never.
Brandon, we appreciate the time. Best of luck to you in the banking world.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
That is Brandon Crombean, better known as BJ Crombean, from his time here with the Blues. His dad also spent some time with the Blues as well when he played. A very interesting, you know, yeah, you see players all the time that go in and do different things in their, you know, post-playing lives, but to actually write about it and give suggestions to other players, it kind of says a lot about the kind of person that he is, and the fact that he's just trying to help people that might not even know his name in the NHL. But to go from skating on the ice and punching Ryan Reeves, or attempting to punch Ryan Reeves, to now becoming the vice president of private capital markets.
Capital
I don't know what that means. I'm Googling that right now because I do not know what that means.
Joe, it's the markets that are private and capitalized.
I need Wikipedia to tell me what this job means. Apparently there's jobs available. Indeed.com. I'm going to apply for one.
Okay. You can.
I'm going to say, if a former NHL player could do it, can I?
Why can't a radio host?
Right. Let's see. There's one available in Boston. Quite a few available in Boston. Ooh, Irvine, California, New York, San Francisco, Chicago. God, Chicago's close. Take a look at that one. We'll try to check that out. See if I can get a job by 6 o'clock tonight in the banking world. To go really from playing hockey for a living to doing that, it's a pretty fascinating story. To go do that. Glad we could get him on to talk about all of that. That was BJ Crombie joining us here on the afternoon drive. Cardinals and Padres tonight. Get into more of that as the show rolls on. But there are two different stories going on in the world now that I expect both to not possibly end the world as we know it off. One is the Republican National Convention. That's going on right now. I believe Willie Robertson from Duck Dynasty is speaking tonight.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's speaking tonight, and so is Scott Baio.
Is Baio tonight, or is he later in the week?
I thought I saw him Monday night. I thought he was, like, the final speaker tonight.
How long is this event?
Does it go to the 21st?
Oh, boy.
I thought it was the 21st. Yeah. But then there's this. There's a feud. There's a Hollywood feud going on, Hoff.
It does go to the 21st. Dear God.
Kanye West, Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, what's the deal with this now?
Versus Taylor Swift.
Versus Taylor Swift. She's always involved in something.
The controversy began when Kardashian put video of a conversation between Swift and West on her Snapchat account. The video shows West talking on the phone to a person that is supposedly Swift, discussing lyrics to his song, Famous.
Now, did Taylor Swift know that she was being recorded? This could be a violation, Joe.
We'll get into that. Those lyrics, in which West references Swift, have become controversial. Particularly the line that says, I made that be famous. Swift took issue with that line not long after the song debuted, taking a dig at him in her Grammy acceptance speech in February. Sources connected to West claim that Swift's had... Where'd it go? Oh, I lost the article.
Oh, no.
Claim that Swift had signed off on the lyrics. The feud added new dimensions when Kardashian alluded to the existence of a recording backing up West's claims.
New dimensions.
Kardashian appeared to have made good on those claims Sunday night with the release of videos on Snapchat. Now, if these videos existed, I have Snapchat. I don't know how to post an old video on Snapchat.
I thought they disappeared.
After 10 seconds, they disappear. But I don't know how to, like, post something that I can take a picture of you right now. I don't know how to then put that on Snapchat unless I do it all with Snapchat.
Hmm.
I don't know how that part of it works. The video was allegedly made in a studio in L.A., an important detail since it puts the situation under California penal law. California laws, when it comes to recording phone calls, are stricter than most. While federal law and several state laws allow the recording of calls with the consent of only one person, California's dictate that everyone on the call must be aware of the recording.
Whoops. Were Kanye and Kim not up to date on their California phone recording law?
Apparently not. Swift is may very well want just that, though. She has reportedly already threatened Kanye with criminal prosecution over the recordings, according to TMZ. Penalty for illegal wiretapping in this case is up to 364 days in jail and a fine of up to $2,500.
It would never
which
happen.
Which would be difficult for Kanye to pay because he's in so much debt.
It wouldn't happen because it'd be absolutely absurd. But it would be funny if they had to go to jail for a year because of a Snapchat post. It'd be a humorous ending to what is a very,
right.
very bad story.
Right. So that's what's going on in that world. If you were unaware of what was happening, Hoff, that is apparently what's going on.
Speaking of criminal activity, I mentioned Jim Cramer's show during the interview with Brandon Crombie, and Gardner gave me a look, and now he's back in the studio. And now I asked Gardner, what was with the look when I mentioned the Should Be Convicts television program?
Well, because you have an agenda and you can't. I mean, that guy kind of consumes you at times, it seems.
I still like him. he should be in prison, or he should have at least been in prison with Lenny Dykstra.
So, what if, was it Brandon?
Yeah, Brandon, BJ.
He's Brandon now, Gar. Yeah. Like if you got a new job in an actual industry,
what if he said, oh yeah, I wanted to get into this because of Jim Cramer.
If Gardner got a job, a job with a bigger title, he would go by C.
You
Williams.
You guys fail to remember I once worked at UBS Payne Weber.
For how long?
I forgot about that one. So I've worked at, Lake Forest Country Club, Kids Gap, Baby Gap, and UBS Payne Weber.
And what'd you do at UBS Payne Weber?
A lot of cold calling.
How would this go?
How long did that last?
All right, you're talking
I can't
to
see
several
you.
Months.
Oh, really?
You're talking to Joe. What was your pitch?
A friend who was studying.
So those were all your jobs before you have you've worked at almost every
before
radio
you
station
settled
here,
for radio.
Here in St. Louis.
Well, that was in between. Was it in between? No, it was before radio. Yeah.
Since then, you've been to the FM side. You've been to Camel X.
Yeah.
And now you're here.
The woman. And now here.
Yeah.
Wait, how would
the woman and the man?
How would the cold call?
I like
call...
to just point out that there was a station in this town called the Woman.
Yeah.
The man, okay, whatever. But this is just to point out there was once a time where there was a station called the Woman.
What was the generic script for the cold call?
I really can't remember, but they would devise a list based on demographics, or they would get a list from somewhere.
You would take advantage of little old ladies, wouldn't you? They're in between their stories, and you're calling them trying to suck their money out of their.
Do you
account.
Want me to tell you why?
Story.
Why I quit. Because it's what you said right there is partially no.
Is it really
it is
true?
Why I
wait a
quit.
Minute. You had a conscience, and that's why you quit.
Yeah.
When did this happen?
It got to, like I was wearing like cufflinks every day.
Oh my God! This is a foreign person.
Oh yeah.
You're wearing jeans and an Under Armour.
And the guy,
shirt right
the guy
now.
Who was the boss there, used to work in radio in New York and was trying to convince me to get out of radio and not go into radio.
Was it Jason Barrett?
No.
I think he ever worked in New York.
So, like, he's like, oh, you can do this, and then you can make this much money. And I'm like, well, let's just wait and see here. And the only reason I took it was because a friend was studying for the Series 7, so needed, like, hey, can you take care of this? And I'm like, well, I could use a job right now, yeah. So
unemployment's about to run out, so you need to get a job.
When I finally decided, it was nice, though, because I had my own office. That they would just it was like wood and everything too, and they would just put me in there, and I would just do it. It was tough though. I would spend like 15 minutes of each hour just staring at the wall.
Was it before or after you started smoking cigarettes?
This is after.
How are the smoking breaks at this place?
Yeah, I don't really recall. I think they were pretty liberal about what I could do.
Okay,
I was kind of on my own at times.
What were your jobs before radio, Hoff?
Golf courses and Schnucks.
What did you do at Schnucks?
I was in the seafood department, and I stocked shelves.
What do you do in the seafood department?
Every now and again, you prepare the stuff. Like they ask for a pound of shrimp or some salmon or whatever. You gather that. Sometimes you have to cook. They would ask you to prepare tilapia or salmon and shrimp. One time I had to play God, and I got to decide which lobster got to go.
You got to drop a lobster in boiling water.
I picked the lobster for them. They were going to boil it at home, but you had the fish tank.
You could take home a live lobster from Schnucks?
Sure.
Still today?
Yeah. Well, this is almost 10 years ago now. Yeah.
Didn't know that.
But then why'd you quit? So, like...
Well, there was one day I was going through the list or whatever. I'm about halfway through. I was calling Mr. Johnson, and I... Said, oh, I'm so-and-so with UBS Payne Weber, calling to look into a portfolio review is basically what they were. So you're looking for a financial review. One of our advisors can take a look or whatever. And so I asked for Mr. Johnson, talk a little bit about what I'm calling about, who I am. And the lady goes, oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Johnson passed away 10 years ago.
Oh, you were trying to steal money from a dead guy.
My response was, well, perhaps, Mrs. Johnson, you would like to come in. And she bit.
Oh, no.
I hung up the phone. I had the information. I hung up the phone. And I was like, I don't want to do this anymore.
I don't understand how you had a conscience then. What happened in between where you lost it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Wow. Mine were, before I did this, My first job was at a nursery, like for plants. It's called Morgan Roth's Nursery.
I like how you clarify.
Not for children?
Not for kids.
Right.
For plants.
Apparently, this nursery, it was called Morgan Roth's Nursery, it was in Godfrey, Illinois, used to be like this mecca of nurseries in the St. Louis area. Like,
really?
Plants as far as the eye can see, just taking up acres of land. And it had gone down to about like two fairly large greenhouses where there wasn't a whole lot going on. Not many people ever came in.
What year was this?
Good Lord. I think I was driving by. I might have been 16. I might have been 15. So, I might have been.
Was so it we're like 96, 97?
No. We're talking probably like 2000.
Oh, so it was Bill Clinton's fault. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we're looking
to think
at like,
what politician we had to blame for the shrinking.
Yeah, we're looking
of,
like 2000. So the owner of it, Mr. Morgan Roth, was a very old, very angry man who wanted things done a particular way. This included watering the plants, how the plants were watered. To where I would get there first thing in the morning, and I would have to water all the plants. And he would sit at the window of his house, which was right next to this nursery, and he would watch, while sitting in his wheelchair, watching from out the window. And constantly throughout the process would call the nursery, where I would have to stop watering, walk up to the front of the building, grab the phone, answer the phone, to where he was on the other end telling me that I was watering plants the wrong way.
Were you drowning them?
Yeah. I don't know what I was doing.
You can't drown the hydrangeas, Joe.
He said I was doing it the wrong way. How he was able to see from that far away, I could have been drowning them. No possible way this man could have seen it from as far away as he was.
Did he have cameras?
No. No. There wasn't.
He did.
He would sit at the window and watch. That's how he was watching it. I guess he would time how long I was at each plant.
Wait. So he's sitting in the window.
Watching me water plants, yes.
Watching you water plants.
Yeah.
So creepy.
And he's telling you you're doing it the wrong way.
Yes.
He wanted you to do something a little different.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
What,
so
where
his,
were you going with that?
No,
he had like a...
Sitting in the window, watching.
He was, I would believe...
Do a little something different for me.
He was a very angry man, so I don't know if he was ever married before, but it was just him and his, I guess, nurse that he had that lived at the house with him. And she would pay us at the end of every week in cash. And she rounded up. She was just like, how many hours do you think you work this week? And you'd say a certain amount. And she goes, how does this much sound? And you go, okay. And she'd hand you cash every Friday for the work that you did.
Hey, Joe, have you...
One day, I get a call in the morning saying, yeah, you don't need to come in tomorrow. We'll call you back to work again. I'm thinking, okay, well, it doesn't really sound like I got fired. Maybe there's something else going on. Maybe they're, you know, wondering what they're doing. And this wasn't too far away from my house. One day, driving somewhere, and I look over to where Morgan Roth's nursery was, and it's not there anymore.
Oh, no!
I came through, and they demolished it. So I thought, I better go get a new job.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
So from there, I worked at Emos for several years. I worked at Casey's General Store for several years. And I also did some work at, I worked at the Godfrey Park District.
And what was this guy's name?
Morgan Roth.
What was his first name?
I can't remember. If you said it, I would know, but it's a man that would have been born in like the 20s or 30s. A name like that. Maybe like a Henry. Something along those lines.
Howard.
I don't. If you're looking it up and you say it, it might ring a bell. But yeah, the time
just,
I worked,
you just had a text come in though that had me curious, and I
oh.
was joking.
You went and looked it up.
No, but now I'm wondering.
Oh. But yeah, no, Casey's and Emo's, those were fun jobs. One time I had to work very hungover on a Saturday morning at a Casey's, and I fell asleep at the cash register.
Which one was the better pizza?
I'm always partial to. I do like just a slice from Casey's, but if you give me an Emo's Deluxe, that's one of the best pizzas you'll have. But yeah, fell asleep working the cash register one time, and the person that woke me up luckily was like my best friend's dad that was coming in to get gas.
Anybody else who knows what would have happened? But I hear Joe wake up, and I look up, and it's his dad. Thinking, I better stay awake. All right, well, you guys look up information on this. It is 4:01. We're well into the 4 o'clock hour. We need to take a break, come back with more. We have On This Day coming up in the 4 o'clock hour as well. It is the Afternoon Drive, CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM, InsideSteel.com.